Welcome to What Is Going Ohms, transforming your destiny by decoding your emotional DNA, in which hosts Sandy Sedgbeer and Judy Wilkin-Smith help you unravel and reframe the unconscious ancestral patterns that may be secretly limiting your success in life, love, finance, and career.
Hello, and welcome to episode 5, in which Judy Wilkin-Smith, founder of System Dynamics for Organizations and Individuals, and an expert in decoding emotional and organizational DNA, shares the secrets of how you can identify generational patterns transmitted via your ancestral DNA. And this week, we're going to be looking at how you can transform your relationships with colleagues, teams, business partners, bosses, and others who have the power to further your career. Judy Wilkin-Smith, welcome back.
Hi, Sandy. It's great to be back with you.
Good to have you here, Judy. Excuse me. So, to reiterate what you've been sharing with us over the past 4 episodes of this series, while neuroscience teaches us that how we are in relationships is the result of patterns learned from our early caregivers, that's only half the story. The other half is that as our relationships often begin in the emotional DNA and events of our ancestors, that is what often affects our relationships in every area of life. Today we want to look at business relationships, because you say that how we are at home is how we show up at work in reaction to or collusion with those inherited patterns. So let's just give us a little overview of what this is all about, just to remind people so that we can understand where you're coming from with this, and then we can dive into how it affects our relationships at work, our career, our success in life.
Perfect. So what we know, as we've said before, is that you don't just inherit your physical DNA, you also inherit your emotional DNA. And part of that umbrella of emotional DNA is relationships. So you're also inheriting relationship DNA. So the way that you are at home is going to show up, as we said, at work as well. All the unresolved things at home will show up again at work, because systems are elegant. What they can't solve in one system, they're going to seek solution for in another system. So when you get to work and you have this boss that really, really gets on your nerves and you can't take it, you want to see which of your parents you may be rejecting or you may not be able to connect with. And when you have a colleague who you'd like to drop out of the first window, have a look at which one of your siblings that you may be struggling with. And have a look at the dynamics in the family system or the patterns of not relating and how they keep trying to find solutions through you, often at work, because, of course, your profession occupies most of your time other than your family time. So what's not getting solved in one will show up in the other. Now, interestingly enough, often if you solve it at work or resolve it at work, that goes back to the family system. Excuse me. So they're pretty much in service of each other all the time.
So last month we focused on romantic relationships, but while our behaviour in the workplace may stem from the same unconscious patterns as show up in our intimate relationships, the way that the patterns surface at work might be a bit different. I mean, not only are we in a much bigger environment at work where all of our colleagues are probably also displaying a lot of their own patterns, but bosses and colleagues are far less forgiving than, you know, families and lovers and partners.
Yeah, this is true, and yet sometimes the other way around. Sometimes they're more tolerant than family and partners.
So it's really so.
I do. You'll find sometimes that a real hardline parent may be a hardline authoritarian boss, but when the person can figure out how to work with that boss, because don't forget it's very much about our relationship. When we suddenly have enough distance between us in the relationship. In other words, it's not mom and I or dad and I, but there's enough distance because it's a leader, and if I want to, I can resign. It allows us to have just a little bit more of an insight into what's going on and to resolve that. I think for many people, they begin to, well, I hope, realize that when this shows up for the third time in their third place of work, something may be going on. And if we then sit and have a look at this work and they look at their family system, they very often recognize where it stems from. Now, very often we'll say, well, that's just the way I am. No, that's not true. That's just the way you are right now. But that can change. It goes back to that whole notion of events create decisions, which create language and actions and feelings, and that becomes the truth. Only it's not the truth, it's your truth. And you can change that anytime you want to. So at all times, the ball is very much in your court. Now, it doesn't always feel like that because we can feel pretty much like a victim, especially in a work relationship. But there are pretty decent ways to turn that around. Once we look at what's happening in our relationships, what's happening in our business relationships, and how we can change that even just 1 degree, because 1 degree changes everything.
But how do we know? I mean, if we're encountering some issues at work, and let's face it, everybody does from time to time, how do we know whether it's us or someone else?
I love that question. Here's the deal. If you're in a place of work, and up until now you've been in 3 or 4 places of work, and you've always managed really well, and all of a sudden you've hit this one, yes, it's telling you to take a look at the patterns, but it may not be about you. This is almost an anomaly. But if this happens to you wherever you go, that's the system trying to tell you, hey, there's a pattern here that you're not looking at. And until you do, we're just going to keep serving up the same thing so that you get it and you can resolve it. Bearing in mind that this is never to punish you. This is always in service of your growth. So it's just going to keep showing up and showing up and showing up. In that case, it's not about the workplace. It's very definitely about you.
So you've told us that all relationships and systems rely on the interaction of 3 basic principles for balance and harmony. And we've looked at the way dysfunctions in these systems play out at home before and in other areas of life. How do they play out in work? How is that different?
Okay, so in work, if we have order, if you've been out of order at home, for example, say you were the kid, but you had to take care of mom and dad because there were circumstances that demanded it. This means when you get to work, you think you've got to do the same thing. So now you become either the boss or the team leader, or you become the one at work that they say, oh, you know what? Don't give Sandy that. She can take it. She can take it. She can take it. So again, what's not resolved at home or hasn't been looked at is going to show up there. You're going to be the workhorse because they know you can do it. Or conversely, at home, you may have had to be the small one in order to let somebody else be taken care of. And so now at work, you don't know how to show up. You're always the small one because in your mind it says, this is a loving pattern. But it's costing you everything. So you've got to look at that pattern and see 2 things. What is the cost and what is the gift? Because both are always there. The cost is often almost a blind, closed-eyed following of an old pattern, and the gift is what's trying to emerge through you to become something bigger in and as you.
Judy, you teach people in courses and 3-day events to identify basic patterns, leadership patterns in individuals and organisations, and you teach them how to see their costs and opportunities. Now, it's one thing to recognise patterns in others, but it's really not so easy to recognise them in ourselves. Now, you've just talked about if things keep showing up again and again, but again, I ask the question, things may keep showing up again and again, but it still may not be ours. How do we know? How can we identify if it's, you know, what sort of clues would we be looking for?
Okay, so there are two clues that you're going to be looking for. The first one is, where is your biggest frustration at work? So when you encounter frustrations and you encounter things that are coming at you and showing up as brick walls, what you want to look at is, where did that first ever happen for me in my life? And is that what's happening for me again at work? Is this a form of what's happening again for me at work? Am I having to be an unwilling leader or an unsupported leader? Do I feel like I'm being pushed back against because of my color, my creed? What is showing up for me in this way? And again, if it's something to do with your color, your creed, your culture, but even though it feels very personal and you are representing it, it's actually not yours. You're taking it on for something or someone in the system. So how do you know when it's yours? Is when you sit down and you say, I'm super frustrated, and then sort of the next thoughts are, I really wish. When you can wish that something was different, you're looking at the pattern that wants to rest in the super frustrated, and you're looking at the pattern trying to emerge in the wish, in which case, this is yours. Does that help?
It does. So how do you then handle that? I mean, how do you begin to resolve that pattern?
Okay, so one of the things that I ask people to do is sit down and write down your biggest frustrations about where you are at work right now and the relationships that you have at work. Where are you struggling with those work relationships? Where are you struggling with yourself at work? Now, I want you to write down all of those exactly the way that you would say it to yourself. In other words, what am I telling myself? Then I want you to write down, what are you feeling? And then I ask people to write down, what actions do you take around that? Do you withdraw? Do you double up? What do you do? So now we have the pattern that's trying to rest. And the next question I ask them about that is, where did that begin? Did that happen for your mother, your father, someone else in the family? Or did it happen for you in a prior event? So it'll either be someone in the family or a prior event of your own. And when you look at that, you want to ask yourself, if I have one new thought, one new feeling, and take one new action, how can this change for me? The minute you do that, you're starting to look at the pattern that's trying to emerge. So you move yourself from, how am I feeling, either victimized or limited, to what is possible for me here?
Okay. How do we recognize if it's not us, if it's our boss or another colleague? What sort of clues would we be looking for there?
If it's a colleague or a boss, what you'll find again is it's an anomaly, because this doesn't normally happen for you, but you may be representing something in their system, of course. And so if the oddest thing that I do, but it works like a charm, is to say to people, put down a piece of paper with my boss on it, put down a piece of paper that's got me on it, and then put down a piece of paper that's got who I'm representing down on the floor. And then I ask them to place me on top of who I'm representing, stand on that, and then slide it backwards and step away from it. And that will often resolve it. It creates enough of a distance between you and the one you're representing for you to not be standing in the way of whatever's happening from that boss or your colleague. The other thing that I found super helpful is that if you're in a place where you can talk to either of them, is to go up to them and say, hey, I seem to be tweaking something for you. Can we talk about that? Is there something that I seem to represent for you that's difficult? What could we do to do this differently? And often just that act of recognizing that something's up will pull attention onto it and allow it to disentangle and resolve.
Some people might feel quite threatened in that scenario, particularly if they are, if this is all unconscious anyway, it's a fairly common reaction to attack, to defend, isn't it? Do you find when you're working with large corporations that people are willing to accept that the problem might be with them and not with somebody else that they think it's been with?
So here's what I do when I'm working with organizations and individuals in organizations. It's never about blame, shame, or name. I don't do that. What I will do is put down the representative pieces of the issue. In other words, I'm struggling. Why am I struggling? Let's have a look in your family system. Let's have a look in the organization. It appears it may be with you. For me, the thing that I will do is say to them, so let's have a look at what's trying to emerge, because there is a gift that's trying to happen here. It's not that you're stupid. It's not that you're bad. It's none of that. There is an opportunity trying to surface. Let's find it. Let's look at what gift is trying to come through to you, and it's hammering so hard that it's got your attention. Because for me, it's never about it's your fault. It's about it's your opportunity. And I don't say that tongue in cheek. It's really about looking at what brilliant gift is trying to present itself to you now. And tackling it that way, I don't get resistance, because people know immediately I'm not there to tell them they're stupid or wrong. I'm really there to find out what's right and what's trying to emerge.
You have a number of great, I would say, lists, if you like, of little keywords that you've applied for certain types of leadership. Someone who might be, a weak person, or, taking on a kind of parental role, or expressing, something that's in their DNA lineage. Can you give us some ideas? Because I seem to recall, having read some of those, that there are really good ways of being able to understand by their actions what the problem actually is.
Beautiful. Yes, absolutely. These are called the different leadership styles. And if you're struggling with a leader, or if you have a situation where there are decisions that can't be made, or the leader's too far away, then it's really useful to be able to understand the different kinds of leaders that you can get. Because as you say, once you get that, it becomes about what's happening rather than good and bad leaders. So we have things like an unwilling leader. And what you'll see with that often is that the employees don't seem to know who the leader is. In fact, if you walk in to go and work with that company, you can't tell immediately who they are, because they will be almost hidden in the crowd. And then you get unsupported leaders. And these unsupported leaders are also what I call Atlas leaders. They carry the weight of the world on their shoulders, and they don't want anybody else often to have to suffer, like maybe they were suffering in the family. So they carry it all. The problem with that is nobody else feels able to carry their own weight, so they feel unuseful and you begin to lose top talent. Then you get what you call a disillusioned leader, and that's somebody who's been let down or betrayed in their family or betrayed by the system, and they trust nobody. So everybody's wrong. Something's going to happen. The sky is falling. Nothing's going right. And with a leader like this, you really got to get to what is the bottom line fear, because if you can disentangle the fear, they have permission to let go of that and start trusting again. And then you get what you call a good kid leader. In other words, they do everything for that's right, and they do everything for the system, but they never advocate for themselves, and they never advocate for their team. They're always taking one for the team. And when I'm working with a leader, I'll warn them, do not take one for the team, because when you take one for the team, you and the whole team are going down. So the relationships there are shot. Then you get a brittle leader, and a brittle leader often comes from a leader who feels a bit like an imposter. They will tell you, I don't have all the answers. And this is often where I say to them, be aware, you're not an imposter, you're a pioneer. You may not have all the answers, but you know how to go and find the answers. But they're the ones who are in danger of burnout because they drive very, very hard to be able to be good enough. They don't feel good enough. And then the one that you talked about, which is the parental leader, someone who's had to take care of people at home, wants to take care of everybody at work. And again, what you see is everybody gets treated like family members and they respond the same way. In fact, you will even find that they almost mirror members of this leader's family and they can't carry their own weight and they struggle. And then you get a maelstrom leader. Now, this is one of the most difficult. A maelstrom leader is somebody who doesn't feel like they have the capability. They don't feel like they can really do the job that's being asked, but they're not about to tell anybody, and they're desperately afraid. So what you'll find in this situation is it creates almost a messiah leader kind of idea. And what they do is they create a crisis, solve a crisis, create a crisis, solve a crisis. And every time the group think that they're going in one direction, they change direction. So there's never a clear win for them. And it exhausts the organization. You often hear people say when this leader goes, oh my goodness, we can breathe again. So these are just some of the leaders that you will see. And these all begin to be created at home and about this, and through the things we tell ourselves about who we are at work, how we are at work, how that feels, and what we have to do.
It's a lot to think about, isn't it? I mean, here we are going to work each day, or some people do, and just think they're going to do a job, and there's this huge underlying, you know, historic, you know, pattern of relationships. And if you're working with a big company and in a big team, you've got an awful lot of people all expressing their own patterns.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. They're all expressing their own patterns, but they're also expressing the patterns of the ones above them, which means you've got a double whammy going on. You're expressing the leadership line, you're expressing the team leader line, and your own stuff. So you're in the middle of a giant game of relationships, trying to navigate all of these different levels.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Actually, it's not a terrible sound.
It isn't. It sounds, I mean, it's a long time since I worked in a company, but if I cast my mind back, I never found it very pleasant at all. It's like being at school. There were cliques, there were little groups, there's competition, pushing and shoving, people trying to one-up one another. It's not an environment that I've ever felt particularly comfortable in, because I find it doesn't really help the creative process.
Now, interestingly enough, I hear that, and you're right to a large extent, and I think this is where the big opportunity is for companies. Now, I will tell you, I've just worked with a group who shall remain nameless, but I've just come back from working with a group who were phenomenal. They sat down, we did pieces, so they had meetings, but in between we did pieces of this work. And they began to realize very quickly who they were as leaders and why. And I will tell you that I don't think I saw one bit of backbiting in the room. Each one wanted to know by the end of all of that how they could be at stake for the next one and the next one, understanding that if they were at stake for each other, the whole system was going to benefit, and so were they, because they were solving their own patterns at the same time as they were sorting out the organizational ones.
Well, we're going to take a short break now, Judy, and when we come back, you can tell me why it is you love this work so much. It does seem very complex to me. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and you're listening to episode 5 of Transforming Your Destiny by Decoding Your Emotional DNA. with organisational and family patterns expert, motivational speaker, systemic coach and trainer, Judy Wilkins-Smith. And this month we're looking at how our emotional DNA affects our relationships in the workplace. We'll be back with more after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
Mental health. Most people think it means mental illness. Most people are wrong. Mental health doesn't apply to just some of us. It applies to everyone. We're all susceptible to anxiety and depression. They're human conditions. And no person should ever feel embarrassed, ashamed, or be discriminated against for being human. Cracked the Podcast strips away the shame, fear, and stigma by expanding the conversation into areas less often visited. From brain and body chemistry, hormones, food, nutrition, trauma, and the microbiome, to pharmaceutical drugs, psychedelic substances, meditation, visionary experiences, and spiritual awakenings. Cracked, the podcast, will explore them all, including the notion that, for many, breakdown can be the beginning of breakthrough. For in the words of singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, there is a crack in everything. It's where the light gets in. Cracked, the podcast, slaying the dragons of mental health. Join co-hosts Sandy Sedgbeer and Rebecca Shaper on the first and third Thursday of every month at 12 noon Eastern Time.
Coping 19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back. Before we continue with today's conversation with Judy Wilkins-Smith, I have a personal recommendation for you. If you're feeling stuck in a rut and want your life to move forward, but don't know how to create new opportunities, take my advice and read The Necktie and the Jaguar by Carl Greer. In addition to being a fascinating memoir, it contains some valuable keys that can put you effortlessly on the path to transformation. For more information, visit carlgreer.com, G-R-E-E-R. And now back to episode 5 of Decoding and Transforming Your Emotional DNA at Work and in Your Business Relationships with Judy Wilkins-Smith. Judy, tell me, why is it that you love and are so passionate about this work?
Easy. And that word describes it all, easy. This is practical transformation, and it's easy. I know when we talk about it and we go into the different layers, it sounds complicated. It's really not. When I teach this around the world, it's a very simple template. And yes, I've done a lot of it, so I can talk to you at the different layers. But really, it's as simple as, where am I frustrated? Where do I wish to be? How do I get there? And it's understanding those pivot points that lie in your language, in your actions, and in your feelings. I'm passionate about it because I see the difference it makes. You know, when you start out with a modality, you hope it's going to do something. You're not sure. you start to work with it, you see one or two bits and pieces here and there, and you think you've gotten lucky. Well, I'm at the place where I don't get lucky, but I get to watch people doing their work, and I get to see the difference it makes. And I watch them transforming literally from victims to thriving and from stuck to flourishing. I get to see courage every single day in relationships. And I get to watch people wake up and discover the remarkable lives that they are. And that's a pretty decent job to have.
Why do you think it is? I mean, we're hearing an awful lot lately about lineage and, intergenerational DNA and the patterns that we pass along. And, you know, so often they're not ones that we're even aware of. We may have not even have had any personal contact with, whoever is the origin of these patterns. But why do you think suddenly now everybody is talking about this? You know, what is emerging in psychology and neuroscience that's shining a light on this?
I think what's happening is this. For the longest time, we tried to work everything out in our heads. Our relationships, our business relationships, whatever. We couldn't see what we were doing. And yes, you're quite right. Often we're not even aware of these patterns. In fact, that's one of the first things I teach people. Your inheritance of these patterns is completely unconscious. But it's when we begin to focus on it, and in this case, when you can dimensionalize it the way that I do at an event, where I can take what's in your mind and put it out in front of you, and you can actually see it, hear it, taste it, touch it if you want, walk through it, that you begin to make connections that you couldn't before. So it's literally that the invisible is now becoming visible. And things like epigenetics are clearly demonstrating that a significant psychological hit on the system that's not resolved is going to impact the system and show through in our DNA. So this is now being studied and demonstrated. And I think what we're seeing, and with neuroscience, of course, it's much the same. You're seeing the neural pathways being demonstrated. So I think what's happening is, the scientific part is finally catching up to what we knew or have known. And now that people can see that there is a science behind it and it's being studied and being proven, it's almost as though that part of our nervous system can rest. You know, the part that says, well, I don't want to go down a woo-woo rabbit hole. No, this is pretty scientific and it's very well documented. So people are being able to pick up pieces and go, oh, if that's so, how does that apply to me? And they're starting to make those connections. And the intergenerational ones are particularly important because you can have things that have traveled literally hundreds and hundreds of years waiting for somebody to notice them. And again, literally in the space of an hour or two, say, that doesn't work for me. I'm doing it differently. Think about that. I mean, I've got goosebumps. You are literally rewriting your family's history and you're creating a whole new way for your family to be. And you see this very clearly in generations where nobody's ever been to college. And you watch the look on the face of the first person to do it. And then you have a look at the looks on the faces of the entire family. And you can see they all know. Something has changed. Mm-hmm. That's why I love this work.
Well, you mentioned about, you know, we used to kind of try to figure it out in our head, but now what seems to be happening is that, people are using sensory skills in trying to resolve issues in the workplace. And you talk about what you call dimensionalizing issues in a company.
Yeah.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Okay. So if I were doing this at an event, so let's start with an event that I would typically do. If I were doing this at an event where it's something like family or the money one that I'm doing in October, what you would do is we take the issue that you stuck with And we break it down into its components. So what are all the pieces of this issue? And each one is either represented by a live representative or by a piece of paper. Either way, we know that as humans, we're very well able to transfer our emotions onto different or inanimate objects, which is why people at the workplace will annoy you, because you've transferred that feeling onto someone else who represents it. So back to what I do. I either get a live representative or a piece of paper for each different part, and then I'll say to the people, place it for me the way that it is for you. And people will set out their pieces of paper, or they'll set out the live representative. And then I start to ask them questions like, okay, so I notice, for example, you and your boss are miles apart. Oh, yeah. In fact, he's facing the other way. He's not even looking at the organization. No, he's disengaged. So they said, what you're doing is you instinctively set up the way things are or the way things seem to be for you. And that's where we start. Then I'll say, so where did this begin? What is the effect on you? And they can speak to that because they're looking at the different parts. And so then I might say to them, go and stand nearer to that part and tell me what happens as you get closer to it. Well, again, we're very well able to say, I don't want to get closer to that boss. This is threatening. I'm finding myself backing away. Now you're actually showing yourself what you do. So now you can see what's happening. You can see the action. I will ask you, where are you feeling that? In my throat, in my chest. Have you ever felt that before? Yes, when I was a kid. What was happening when you were a kid? So now we're together, we're walking and talking and connecting the dots, and suddenly you're going, I know where this comes from. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So all of that started back then still keeps filtering through, and I'm still making it about that, even though I thought I'd forgotten it. Time for me to think something different. I've grown up. This can't hurt me anymore. This is no longer the way I think. So now, if you listen to what I'm saying, you're starting to create different thoughts. And I'll say, so what does that feel like? Huge relief. Where? In my chest. So now you've got different feelings. So what do you notice now? Oh, I can walk right over to the boss now. Different action. In that moment, you are rewiring the way you were and becoming the one you are, which means that who you could be or are going to be is now also different. So not only have you rewired what came from behind you and what's in the present, you're now laying down a path forward, not just for you, but also for the ones who come after you. Now suddenly everyone in the family is not stupid with money because I'm good with money. Now it's all of a sudden everybody in the family is not intimidated by the boss because I know how to work with the boss. So the minute you start that rewiring and it's an embodied experience, which is what's happening, you're doing what we call, you're making a new truth and you're buying the new truth, which means there is now a new truth. So you're literally transforming what was in your body and was in your mind into what is now and then what's possible. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. You also say that we inherit our leadership or, you know, our workplace behavioral DNA from those who've inhabited our roles before us. What do you mean by that? How does that work?
So there are two things. I want to first address, you said we inherit our behaviors at work. I had somebody recently who said to me, gosh, it's so different for me. When my father was a leader in this company, he couldn't get further because his culture wasn't accepted. And for a long time, I played number two. Now I see I don't have to do that. So that's that parent to child. But the other thing that happens is you have a leader who comes in. The leader makes a difference, but perhaps there's something that happens, an accident that happens. The leader is blamed. The leader leaves in disgrace. If the leader is not acknowledged for what he contributed, there's now a big gap. It's a wound in the organization. If it's not addressed and resolved well, the next leader comes along, and that next leader is going to be vulnerable to a similar pattern, because now the system is looking for the next leader to fail, and the next leader to fail, and the next leader to fail. So the way around that is to look at it and say, what did this leader do right? What did the leader give to the company? And what is the leader taking from the company? What did the company do right? What did it give to the leader? And what is it taking from the leader? Because that way, that position is closed out and completed. And then it is vacant and ready for the next one. Otherwise, you sit with a wound that creates a revolving door syndrome.
Are you finding that when you're working with large companies and organisations that, you know, some of the people that are in leadership positions are willing or more willing than they have been before to do the personal work, or are they there to make sure that it's their employees that are doing it?
Actually, that's a superb question given the trends at the moment. At the moment, what we're noticing is your traditional leader who was do as I say is no longer working. It's got to be do as I am or do as I do. So we're seeing visionary leaders. So the visionary leaders know that if they don't do their work, they can't grow. And if they can't grow, their company can't grow. So I literally encounter no resistance from leaders. When we look at it that way, they know they've got work to do, and if they don't want to cap out as a leader, they have to do their work. Again, when I do that, I'm careful to work with the career and the family, but in a way that is really respectful so that they can see everything is in service of them and their growth is in service of their team. And so, no, I don't have resistance to that.
Well, what do you feel then? I mean, right now there seems to be, you know, as there is throughout our society globally, you know, division. On the one hand, we see companies, I don't know if you're familiar with the story of the guy who decided that he was going to give every single one of his employees a salary of a minimum of $75,000 a year.
Yes.
And everybody said he was crazy. And then suddenly, you know, a year or two later, we're seeing reports saying, ha-ha, it actually worked in his company. Then we get the polar opposite. We get companies like Amazon that are, you know, the culture appears to come from the top down, where the staff are treated really, really badly. You know, so what exactly is happening?
Okay, so if we look at that and we look at the relationships in both businesses, if we look at the first relationship, he did a very smart thing. What he did was he had money and he looked at it and he said, if I want my company to be bigger, I've got to unlock the discretionary energy of my people. And the only way that you unlock discretionary energy is to be able to play their game as well as your own. So how are they important as well as how is the company important? And the minute that he did that and he engaged their passion and he shared with them his, everybody could play. So, of course, they were all in. He bet on them, and they bet on him. So it's a mutual balance of give and receive. When there's a mutual balance of give and receive, people will bend over backwards, not just to give you their 9-to-5 energy, but to give you their 9-to-5 energy plus their passion. That's their ideas, their enthusiasm, their willingness to make it work, their ability to problem solve. He unlocks the creative brain instead of the survival brain. In the case of something like an Amazon, and I don't know that that's true. I mean, this is what we hear, but based on what we hear, when people feel badly treated, they're usually telling you, I don't know how to belong. I don't know where I belong. So you've now got belonging and order compromised. And they want me to be on the job 24/7 for very little pay. So your balance of give and receive is shot. And in systemic work, we know very clearly when you make money off the backs of your people without fair and adequate compensation, in the end, it cannot survive. So that may mean that the company may go on, but the culture will tank. It's going to be toxic. People will come in because they need a job. You're going to get their 9-to-5 energy. You're not going to unlock their discretion or discretionary energy, which is their passion. And so it plods along like a big giant, and eventually people come in and they go. And you may not always retain top talent. It may come, but top talent also knows it has its own journey, and it wants to go higher, better, faster, stronger, and it may not stick around.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked before about this whole thing about give and receive. I mean, it seems to be one of the most important things, you know, that we should be giving attention to, because it's huge. Imbalance that creates these problems.
That's right. And it's huge. And people know it. They know when it's happening. When you say to somebody, oh, I'm always on the clock, I swear, you know that it's off. When you say, you know what, I'm always on the clock, but my goodness, do they take care of my family? Do they take care of a really good salary? Do I have the perks? I will give that. Then you know there is a balance of give and receive, and you may want to negotiate how much. But balance of give and receive is an inner compass piece. You will feel it in your gut, and your gut, as we've spoken about before, is very much an inner compass that you do not want to ignore. That is the part of the head-heart-gut system. It is your guiding compass.
So we're talking now about values as well here, because, you know, if we feel valued, if, you know, we have a boundary of I'm prepared to do this and no more for the salary I'm getting, or, you know, for this team that I'm working with, you know, that's what it comes down to, isn't it?
It does. And Harvard, I think it's Harvard Business School, has just done an article, I think it's them, where they said when you can't give money, there are other things you can give. And this is what people are looking for. And I know when I work with people, one of the things that we work with very much is people will say, they keep chucking money at me. That's a very telling statement. When they say that to me, I'll say to them, what is your title? Often, their title is too little for the money that's being thrown at them. And so the compensation in that case is to get the higher title, because title also carries weight and currency. If I'm a VP, it's very different to going to go and give my resume into a company where I say I'm a VP, or I say I'm an SVP, or I'm a C-suite person. So if you can't give money, there are titles, and titles carry weight. And people are wanting that, and they're wanting to, as you said, they're wanting validation. I had somebody recently who said to me, she's a leader, I almost made a bad mistake. And I said, what was that? And she said, I have somebody who's the most amazing person in my company. I never have to look at her. And I said, stop right there. I know exactly what you nearly did. You took her for granted. Not in a bad way. Not in a bad way. You thought, this person is so good, I don't have to worry about them. But the fact is, you don't have to worry about them. You do have to validate them. People need validation. They need what we call ROI, return on interaction.
And that's true in every relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, you've just hit on something that you said there that's very important. You and I have a relationship. I do something nice. You go, gosh, that was nice. You know what? When I see her again, I'm going to do this. So you do something nice. And I go, oh, my goodness, that was so thoughtful. What do I do next time? I make sure that I do something thoughtful. And this is how you create a dynamic relationship. And it's the same with leaders. If leaders are interested enough in their people, the people are interested enough in their leader.
And we're not just talking about, leadership in businesses. We're talking about leadership in other areas of life as well, surely.
Every area.
You know, if you happen to belong to a club or some other kind of organization, or, you know, a charity, or even parenting.
Absolutely. It's leadership everywhere. People are looking at each other. Here's what we need to know as well in relationships. If you are kind, if you are considerate, if you are inviting, and if you are grateful, you unlock that person completely, because they now know that this is no longer a transactional relationship. It is a dynamic, invitational leader value and relationship. And if you unlock that, if you begin to operate at a much deeper level. What we call super connectors are people who are very present with anybody that they're around. They really want to know what you're about, who you are, what you do, what your interests are, what your fears are. And as human beings, that's very important to us. So when we move beyond transactional relationships into deep heart-centered relationships and present relationships, pretty much the world is your oyster.
Are you noticing, I heard something yesterday that I did not know when I was talking to somebody in Australia who was telling me that in Australia now, companies have to spend a certain amount of money on the mental health and well-being of their employees. And so a lot of companies are investing in having people, experts in mindfulness or, you know, addressing stress, etc., coming into a company and talking to the employees. Do you see this as part of the same thing, that this is, you know, also about the mental health and well-being of a company as well as, mindfulness or meditation might be?
I absolutely see this as an emerging part of what's happening. People no longer want to just work. They really want to grow. And so what you're seeing there and what I'm seeing here in the U.S. is definitely people, the leading companies who know they want to win in every way, are investing in human potential. It's not just about the mental well-being. It's about how can we get you to be able to play your own game within the bigger game. In other words, what is your career path? What are your desires? What do you want for yourself? What kind of relationships do you want to have? How do we build a bigger you? Because when we build a bigger you, we build a bigger team, which means we build a bigger company that is balanced and relates well.
We're almost out of time now, Judy. I hope that, it's very hard for people to grasp this when they can't actually do the exercises at the same time. You know, I'm sure when people watch you on stage working with a group of people, it all becomes very clear. I do hope that in the last two episodes of this series, we will be able to give people some exercises that they can do at home and begin to see the patterns and how they're playing out in various areas of their life.
So why don't we make that the goal for the last two?
Let's do
that. The practical application of everything that they've heard.
Yeah, good. Okay, Judy, I'm afraid we're out of time now, but thank you. I've certainly learned a lot, and I hope our audience has too. So we'll be back again next month with episode 6, and as Judy's just said, episode 6 and 7 will comprise practical applications, so you can start putting all of this together for yourself. Judy, thank you. Look forward to having your company again next month.
Sandy, likewise, it's always a pleasure.
Okay, thanks everybody. We'll be back with a regular edition of What Is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.